I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, yet another effort to thwart press access in Olympia, but only if the reporters are conservative. And Governor Bob Ferguson trolls female athletes. Plus, the Washington State Legislature really hates straight white men. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at UndividedPod.com. That's UndividedPod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show for $5. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. If you follow me on social media, you know I was up until 2 a.m. ranting online about something that I knew was coming. I guess I was just waiting for it to officially happen because I kind of didn't believe it would, to be honest. I've been covering the legislature in Washington State for 15 years. I was a radio reporter, and then I was a TV reporter, as you know, in Seattle. I've now been independent since 2021, since late 2021. And certainly, when I went independent, I expected some challenges in being able to continue to do the job that I'd been doing in Washington State for a long time. I knew that when I started to dabble in political commentary and give my opinion on policy issues, that maybe not as many politicians would come on the show. Certainly, you know, if I'm being critical of the governor or the attorney general or Democrats in Olympia or Republicans in Olympia, if I offended someone with my commentary, that maybe they wouldn't be willing to come on the show. Although we've had, you know, Democrats in the state legislature on the show in recent weeks. We've certainly had them on before. You know, I've criticized a few Republican policies in the past and still had those Republican lawmakers on the show. What I didn't expect is to be told, you are not a reporter. You're not a member of the media. What I didn't expect is for the government to outright deny me, for the first time in 15 years, full access to cover the legislature that I've been covering longer than almost any other journalist in the state. But that is what happened this week. I got a formal denial from the Washington State House of Representatives. I'll read the letter that I got from the chief clerk, a man by the name of Bernard Dean. It says, Ms. Cruz, I'm in receipt of your appeal dated February 2nd, 2026, because I got an email denial. I formally appealed it to ask for a broader explanation as to why the House was denying my press pass. It says, the House in part looks to the Capitol Correspondents Association to make recommendations regarding whether a press pass applicant is a bona fide journalist or not. Based on your recent engagement in public policy development and advocacy, your request for a House floor pass was denied. Absent additional information, the decision to not issue a press pass is upheld. If you have anything else you'd like us to consider, please provide it to me. So my request for a House floor pass has been denied. I'll get into the rationale further where they talk about my public policy advocacy, and I am going to piece by piece demolish their argument that I should not have a press pass or that anyone who does what I do should not have a press pass. But I want to note first that I am not the only one this has happened to. In the span of 1 week, the Washington State House of Representatives, and specifically the Democrats in power, including House Speaker Lori Jenkins, have denied three people a press pass. Me, Jonathan Cho, and Ari Hoffman. Each of us got similar formal denials, albeit for different reasons. The denial for Ari Hoffman and myself was pretty similar. It's because I don't believe boys are girls, essentially. The only advocacy I've done this year is with on the boys and girls sports issue. And that shouldn't even be something that's open for debate, yet here we are. And the same for Ari, because he supported the Let's Go Washington initiatives. The rationale for Jonathan Cho is a little different. It's because he's employed in part. I mean, he holds many press credentials for Turning Point USA, et cetera. But because he's employed by a think tank, Discovery Institute, to do journalism on homelessness, to cover the homeless issue. And they're using very outdated rules from the Capitol Correspondents Association to suggest that if you work for a think tank, you can't possibly perform any sort of journalistic function. Now, I said at the beginning, I knew this was coming because this fight started last year. And really, I would argue it started in earnest in 2023 as there started to be in the state of Washington more independent media. And let me just say, so let me clear a couple things up here before we dive into it. I have said in the past that I'm not a journalist. I'm a political commentator. You know, I'm starting to rethink what I characterize and call myself. At the time, the reason I wanted to make that differentiation is I wanted people to understand that I give my opinion on things. And that's not what we should be getting from King 5, Como News, the TV stations, the Seattle Times. And so I wanted to make a point of drawing a differentiation so that I could criticize, rightfully so, the Seattle Times when it engages essentially in parroting Democratic talking points, when it's not a blatant opinion outlet. And I felt the same about a lot of the coverage from the news stations. And so I wanted to make it clear, like, look, I'm telling you what I am. I'm a political commentator. But the more I think about it, you know, that doesn't make me not a journalist. How many stories have we broken on this show in just the last month, in just the first month of the year? I mean, our whistleblower report from last year has led to two bills in Olympia to try to fight fraud. We have lawmakers on our show, including Democrats, to do extended interviews on policy discussions. We have a huge story that we're breaking on the show on Monday. And so I'm a political commentator, but by any stretch, I do journalism. We do original reporting. We spend as much, if not more, I would argue more. I worked in a legacy newsroom for 10 years. We do, and Nicole can attest to this, I am very stringent on our fact-checking regimen, in making sure that we check all the boxes. Have we reached out to everyone involved? Have we given everyone involved ample opportunity to provide us with comment, to tell us their version of events? We go through everything to make sure that even when I give you my opinion, it's grounded in truth. And what have I done many times, which I say is always the barometer of a trustworthy journalist? When I get something wrong, I correct it. And I correct it at the top of the show because I don't want to get things wrong, because I think it's important to get things right and for people to trust that you're giving them information you believe to be accurate, and that if it turns out not to be, you will tell them so. So I would put our journalistic integrity and standards up alongside any of the legacy newsrooms that don't even do opinion work. And so, you know, if we want to have this press access rest on the label of journalist, then I'll take the label of journalist back, because we're doing more journalism in a single hour on this show than most news outlets in the state do in an entire month. So as I said, we were expecting this, and I've been covering this issue for a long time. And if there's one thing I have been aggressively consistent on, it's press access. Even when it means I have to criticize a politician who I otherwise like, and even when it means I have to defend a reporter who I otherwise despise. A couple examples. Jim Acosta. When Trump tried to strip Jim Acosta of his press pass, I said something about it. What happened at the Pentagon, I said something about that. When the Associated Press was kept out of Oval Office events because they wouldn't call the Gulf of America the Gulf of America and they'd call it the Gulf of Mexico, I sided with the Associated Press and said, yeah, they actually have a point and you shouldn't ban them from the Oval Office. And even last week, as much as it hurt me to do so, as much as I got ratioed on the internet, I took the damn side of Don Lemon. And I said, I don't think Don Lemon should have been arrested by the federal government and faced federal charges. Because this issue matters to be consistent on. And I believe a free press is a robust press. And I believe in this day and age, it can't just be newspapers and TV stations that are protected and that have access to people in power, because that's a dying industry. I think it should be podcasters. I think it should be bloggers. I think it should be influencers and YouTubers who are in positions to hold powerful people accountable for their audiences. So I mentioned I've covered this for a long time. Back in 2023, I covered what really was the start of this effort in Washington State to push out and silence conservative voices. I published an article, "You're Not Actually a Journalist, What Happens When the Government Dictates Media Access." And this was right around the time that Jonathan Cho got fired from Como News and decided to go independent. And he was being physically blocked from attending press conferences. The King County executive at the time was shouting at him that he's not a journalist. And I said at the time, even though I really didn't even know Jonathan Cho well. We've become friends since then. But I said, this is dangerous. And I urged Legacy News when it was happening to Jonathan Cho to say something, even though they didn't like him, even though they didn't like his reporting. I said, say something or it's going to be you tomorrow. They didn't say anything, of course. And then last year, I published this article. You'll remember the coverage of this well and this whole debacle. Legacy Media just handed politicians more power over the press. For the first time in 50 years last year, the Capitol Correspondents Association in Olympia put politicians in charge of deciding who gets press access and who doesn't. Why did they do that? Well, they did that because we threatened to sue them. Because the Capitol Correspondents Association, which is made up of a handful of legacy reporters, they decided not to give me a press pass. They decided not to give Jonathan Cho a press pass. At the time, they even decided not to give reporters from the center square a press pass. And there was really no good reason for that because they don't even engage in opinion. It was totally bonkers. So we sent collectively, basically a cease and desist. The Capitol Correspondents Association didn't want to get sued. These reporters didn't want to get sued. So they just said, you know what? We'll just give it to the politicians. Rather than let us in last year, this was a whole ordeal. They handed power of access to politicians. So they took the side of politicians over just opening the doors and saying, you know what? It's a new era. Independent media welcome, like the White House has done. So what happened in the offseason, and why I say I knew this was coming, I start to get word that House Democrats, led by House Speaker Lori Jenkins, are plotting and scheming and trying to figure out how they can specifically block me from getting access in Olympia. And I was assured, you know, I had a couple phone calls, I talked to people, that there was efforts, Republicans put in a lot of efforts, and not just on my behalf, to make sure that anyone denied access by Democrats would at least have some form of access on the Republican side. But they really thought they got it to a point where, hey, you know, I could get a daily pass to go down and cover a press conference or whatever it is. They just wouldn't give me a hard pass, which I would sort of let me go anywhere. But then I tried to get, and I requested a daily press pass for Tuesday when we were down in Olympia, because Democrats were having a press conference on the millionaire's tax. So I requested a press pass. I also requested a press pass for tomorrow because there's going to be a public hearing on the millionaire's tax. And that's when I got the formal denial that I wasn't going to be allowed in. I appealed it, and that's when I got the letter that I showed you earlier. And so we knew this was coming, but obviously for a lot of reasons, I think it's illegal. And I think it's incredibly damaging to not only independent media, but to legacy news as well. And ultimately, most importantly, to citizens. So we're in this era where the number of reporters, the number of publications, legacy newsrooms is dwindling by the day. A lot of press conferences that happen in the political realm in Washington State sound an awful lot and go an awful lot like this.
Are there any questions? I don't want to deprive you of the opportunity to ask any questions. Hearing none, I'm going to count us down to 3, 2, 1, Seattle.
Okay, seeing no more questions, thank you again for coming.
How can you call it austerity, though, when it's ballooned 100?
We've heard quite a lot from 70%. This person. I just want to make sure that we have others with the ability to ask questions as well. And then if we come back to you, if nobody else has anything, then we can go on. Okay.
So you have legacy news reporters who want to play gatekeeper and say, oh, likes of Brandi Cruz, we can't have her down here. Yet they rarely even show up to press conferences. The press table on the floor of the House that I'm now denied access to is almost always empty. And in that last clip, when I went down just before the session and Sean Scott was having a press conference about his proposed tax on businesses, and there was a dozen reporters there, but very few of them were asking any questions. I had a ton of questions, so I just kept asking questions and asking questions. And he tries to stop me and say, well, no, we've heard enough from you. Anybody else? And nobody else had anything. I want to point out, and I didn't do it at the time, but now I'm angry. And now it's personal. And you're either for press access or you're not. At the time, there was a reporter standing two down from me. Her name is Shauna Sowersby. She's a Seattle Times reporter. And she is on the Capitol Correspondents Association. She is one of the people who thinks I don't belong in Olympia. She's one of the people who hasn't come to my defense or advocated for access for independent journalists. She stood right next to me at an hour-long press conference. She didn't ask a single question on a policy proposal that could scare major corporations out of the state. She didn't ask a single question. Given multiple opportunities to do so, she wants to have full access, and I think she should, to even if she doesn't ask questions and she's just there. I mean, why are you even there if you're not asking questions? She doesn't want me to have access in Olympia. Why? You're not even asking questions. I've been at multiple press conferences now where she's there and doesn't ask a question. And then I saw on TVW, it was at the governor's press conference on Tuesday, and I saw on TVW, she's sitting in front of me, and they show me, she's got a sour look on her face when I asked the governor a question. A very reasonable, professional question. It's about a couple things. It is about protecting their own jobs. They are working for dying publications. The numbers I've seen for the Seattle Times subscriptions is shocking. So they're trying to protect themselves. The other thing is they're trying to protect Democrats. I firmly believe that. They are trying to protect the party in power. And the really shocking thing, and why we will move forward and file a lawsuit on this eventually if they don't give in, although I'm about to detail some information that I think will force their hand to reissue me a press pass this week after I share what I'm about to share. But I think it's possible we go after the members of the Capitol Correspondents Association personally, because I have it on very good authority that they are helping House Democrats vet people who apply for press passes, even though they said last year that they weren't going to be part of it anymore because they didn't want to get sued. They're still doing it behind the scenes. And at the very least, even if they have no legal culpability in all of this, they're not advocating for more access. They're advocating for less access. And the point that I have made to all of you is, and first of all, I've always been consistent, and I think this is what's starting to drive me a little bit freaking nutty. How many times have I advocated for legacy news? How many times have I advocated for left-wing publications? Like I said, I think the Stranger should have free reign in Olympia. They should be able to go on the Republican side, go to the Republican pressers. 100%, no issue with that. Because I believe that the more people who are down there, the more perspectives that are down there, holding people in power accountable, the better for the citizens. That's who we're supposed to work for. And there's a whole swath of Washingtonians, about 43%, who are not well served by legacy media, who are not having the questions they want asked, whose perspectives aren't represented in Olympia at all. The legacy media covers things from a progressive worldview and works backward from there. And I happen to think that those 43% of Washingtonians deserve people down in Olympia advocating for them. Letting politicians know, hey, these people exist and they don't agree with you. And legacy media would have you shut out. Shutting me out is shutting you out. Shutting Jonathan out, shutting Ori out, is shutting their viewers, their readers, their listeners, the people who follow them on social media out of the political process in Washington State. And if legacy news cared really about the citizens of the state and them having a voice in Olympia, they would be up in arms. They would be telling the Speaker of the House, you can't do this. More voices is better. More questions are better, especially at press conferences where sometimes there's no one freaking there. They would literally rather have no one there than have me there. The Seattle Times reporters, the State Standard reporters, the TV reporters, they would literally rather have no one there than have me there. Is it pride? Is it ego? What is it? Absolutely insane. Now, to be clear about, before I share this blockbuster news that I think totally demolishes their case, what does this mean, my denial? And what does it mean for me and practically? This is just the state house. So, for instance, there was the press conference on the millionaire's tax on Tuesday. I would not have been allowed into that. And I wasn't, because my press pass was denied. So what the Democrats do is they hold their briefings in the wings of the house on their side. And without a press pass, I can't get in there. Without a press pass, I can't go on the floor of the House. Now, Republicans have said for me and anyone else who's denied, anyone. And I told them, I said, you mean like even the Stranger, whoever it is? They said, anyone's welcome on our side to our press conferences. This doesn't affect me in the Senate, and it doesn't affect me in the governor's office. For all the criticism I've given of Governor Bob Ferguson, I had no problem going to his press conference on Tuesday. He took a question from me, answered it. We all moved on with our lives. It was really no big deal. So Governor Ferguson can handle questions from me. The state Senate, Democrats in the state Senate, are the ones who invited me to a legislative preview to ask questions of elected leaders. They have no problem with me being there because I'm a professional. And in fact, we got a nice text, I don't know if I could say this, from Representative Sean Scott this morning, a Democrat in the House, who came here, despite the fact he's a socialist and we agree on very little, he came here and did a 90-minute interview with me, answered every question I had. Some of them were very difficult. And he sent a nice message this morning and basically said, I'm sorry to hear about the press pass situation. And he doesn't think it's right. But he can't outrule Lori Jenkins. So I will not be able to cover leadership press conference. I won't be able to ask Jamie Peterson, Lori Jenkins, or the budget folks on the Democratic side in the House questions at their press conferences. Because even though the governor can take questions from me, they must think a lot of themselves. Because they just, oh my God, I can't even be confronted with those questions. Oh my gosh. I have said, I think the rule for press access should be simple. If you abide by rules of decorum, you're in. You could be a podcaster, you could be a YouTuber, you could be an influencer, you could be a TikToker, you could be a blogger with 10 readers a day, and you're in. Abide by the issues of decorum, don't interrupt things or act rudely or whatever it is, and you're in. And if you break those rules, you're out. What's the problem with that? No one, no legacy news outlet, no reporter can convince me of, accuse me of acting unprofessionally in the state house one time in 15 years. No one can say my questions aren't journalistic, my questions aren't based in fact or reality. I go down there, I don't try to be combative, I might ask hard questions, but that's the job. That is the job. This issue will get me every time. I'm sick of being morally consistent on it to have the legacy news say, screw that bitch. We don't want her in. She's cutting into our business model. So here's something that will absolutely send you over the edge. And I think after this, they're going to have to retract their denial for me. There was a bill getting a hearing at 1:30 p.m. today in the state Senate. Senate Bill 5400, supporting local news. An act relating to supporting local news journalists. Okay, great. And they've done a lot of these. It says, has a couple new sections. And, you know, they always state in here the sort of intent. You know, why are we doing this, right? So it says that a free and diverse Fourth Estate is critical and was critical to the founding of our democracy and continues to be the lifeblood for a functioning democracy. A free and diverse Fourth Estate continues to be a lifeblood for a functioning democracy. Gee, I'm glad they agree. This is a Democrat-backed bill, by the way. Gee, I'm glad they agree with that. They go on to state the intent of SB 5400. The Washington Local News Sustainability Program is established within the department. The director shall make grants to eligible applicants in accordance with this section. Grants made under this section shall be used to support the employment of news journalists covering civic affairs in underserved communities to deepen community understanding of complex community issues and policies. So SB 5400 establishes a grant program that will be used to support employment of news journalists covering civic affairs and help communities deepen their understanding of complex community issues and policies. Okay, well, that sounds an awful lot like what we do, right? I think that we help you understand complex community issues and policies. We cover civic affairs, and we absolutely cover underserved communities. If there's one freaking underserved community in Washington state, it's anyone right of center who has no voice in legacy news. And they do this because they say a free and diverse Fourth Estate is the lifeblood of a functioning democracy. Now, I agree with all of that. Well, you might be saying, well, okay, but Brandy, maybe this bill that's going to provide these grants is focused squarely on people who don't do opinion, right? Maybe they have that carve out. Oh, quite the contrary. In fact, one of the ways they justify this is based on people being able to advocate for their own communities. It says, given the important role of ethnic media, as an example, it is critical to advance state policy that ensures their publishers continue to employ journalists able to create content. An excellent example is the historic preamble, "We wish to plead our own cause," a document penned by the African-American journalist and abolitionist Samuel Cornish in 1827. It marked a significant milestone in the history of the black press as it highlighted the urgent need for African Americans to have their own platform to voice their grievances, advocate for their rights, and challenge racial inequality. This call to action spurred the establishment of numerous black-owned newspapers and publications, solidifying the role of the black press as a powerful tool for empowerment and social change, and laid the groundwork in our country for other ethnic media to plead their own cause. So in this bill, the state legislature, Democrats, are saying we have to support and give money to black-owned media so they can advocate and for themselves and support their own causes? Hold on a second here. Let's revisit why I was denied again a press pass in Olympia. They said, based on your recent engagement in public policy development and advocacy, your request for a House floor pass was denied. Wait a second. But at the same time, Democrats are pushing a bill that will reward black-owned media companies with grants so they can voice their grievances, advocate for their rights, and challenge racial inequality? But I can't voice my grievances? I can't give girls in our state a platform to voice their grievances? I can't give parents in our state a platform to voice their grievances? I can't give conservatives in our state a platform to advocate for their rights, to challenge unequal treatment by the government. Now, this bill is before the Senate today. I promise you this. When this bill winds up in the House, we are going to have a problem. Because the House cannot simultaneously keep me out by saying that I'm engaged in advocacy and pass a bill that will reward taxpayer funds to newsrooms so that they may engage in advocacy for their own communities. Seems pretty straightforward, right? Now, one more thing. As I said, I'm denied because I've engaged in public policy development and advocacy. And the Legacy News doesn't do that. Well, what's this email about? Just this morning, an email went out from the Journal of the Washington Newspaper Publishers Association. This is a coalition of legacy mainstream newspapers across the state, including the Seattle Times. The email sent out this morning said this: "Your advocacy needed. Senate Bill 5400, supporting local journalism. Contact your legislators." So just this morning, as me, as Jonathan Cho, as Ari Hoffman are being denied access to the House on the basis of our advocacy, newspaper employees and owners across the state are being urged to literally advocate for their own causes, to advocate for the bill that will provide them with taxpayer funds to hire journalists. And it's not the only bill that they're urging advocacy on. Here's another one. Urgent action needed to press the Senate Ways and Means Committee to remove Section 26 from SB 6113. So they're even getting in the weeds. They want to press, as newspapers, the Senate Ways and Means Committee to remove a section from a bill that has to do with taxation on advertising services. Because they got a nice fat carve out on that last year. And they're very worried that their nice fat tax break is going to go away. So what do they do? Please contact the members of the committee today. Urge them to remove Section 26. We need to do it again. The Democrats in the Ways and Means Committee need to hear from you in asking them to also remove the section from their companion bill. Your business cannot afford to bear the addition of 10% to all your advertising services. What does that sound like the newspapers, including the Seattle Times, are doing? They're engaging in advocacy on issues they care about and issues that impact them. And you know what? I don't have a problem with that. I don't have a problem with that. Anyone who's impacted by public policy should be able to speak out about it, should be able to make their opinion on it known. And I don't believe that that should be able to preclude them from having the government issue them or their reporters a press pass. I have been consistent on it. Why aren't they consistent on it? Why isn't the Journal of Washington newspaper publishers, considering they're urging their members to engage in advocacy today, why aren't they standing up for me? Why aren't they standing up for Jonathan Cho and Ari Hoffman? Why aren't they knocking down the doors of Democrats to say, hey, we engage in advocacy and you let our reporters in? So you can't shut the other people out. It's because they don't actually care about free press and press access. They say that they're about solutions for the next era of local news. The Washington Newspaper Publishers Association is an advocate for community newspapers, freedom of the press, and open government. Bullshit. You want press freedom for your members. You want an open government when it suits you. Because although I have advocated for your members and will continue to do so time and time again, because I know our fates are tied to each other, I know a government that would diminish my press access is a government that would diminish their press access and already has. But this has not been a two-way street. I advocate for you, but you don't advocate for me, because this is about business for you. For me, this is about doing our jobs. This is about the power of the Fourth Estate. This is about giving a voice to the voiceless. This is about holding people in power accountable. And we'll always be able to do a better job of that, if that's really the mission, when there's more people at the table, not fewer. So this fight begins in earnest today. Coming up next, I think Governor Bob Ferguson is literally trolling us at this point. I think he's trolling us on the issue of boys and girls sports. You will not believe this social post. First, I have told you guys, if you want to save a little money, to schedule time to take the First Mark Challenge and take a look at your insurance, especially if you've just been letting it ride for a few years and you're like, wow, my insurance is getting high. Let First Mark take a look at everything for you. It doesn't take you any time. It doesn't cost you any money. They'll do it for you. Just have that initial consultation, which I guess does take a little bit of time, like 30 minutes on the phone. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. They'll go over all your current insurance, talk to you about your insurance needs. Then they'll go out, they'll shop their market of carriers, and they'll come back to you with their recommendations. And often we hear from undivided viewers and listeners, the common theme is, oh my God, Brandy, why did I not do that sooner? I'm saving thousands of dollars a year. I know, I tell you. Ranelle, Debbie, Connie, all members of the Undivided family who are now members of the First Mark family. So go to firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance companies. So they always have your best interest in mind. All right, calming down. Well, no, let me not calm down yet. First, let's do our segment Unbelievable. Calm down after this. A little bit. Have a little more fun. Boo! All right, so yesterday was Girls and Women's Sports Day. And it's a very timely thing because, of course, on Tuesday, we were down in Olympia advocating for girls and women sports and to protect it, right? Governor Bob Ferguson yesterday, I kid you not, posted this. I'm a proud softball dad. Softball has been a significant part of my daughter Katie's life, and she's going on to play at the collegiate level next year. This was a big year for women's sports in Washington. We saw a historic and inspiring performance from the UW women's soccer team. We also welcomed the Seattle Torrent to the Professional Women's Hockey League. Happy Girls and Women in Sports Day. Thanks to the many girls and women who have broken barriers to make sports more accessible to all. Are you absolutely kidding me? I just can't. What do I even do with that? Are you kidding me? Obviously, I don't have to mention the fact that there are girls in our state who have been trying to get an audience with the governor, like Annalee Wilson and Frances Stout, who were literally out standing on the steps pouring their heart out on Tuesday to support the Let's Go Washington initiative so that they have a chance at fair play. I mean, Annalie, she wants to go to college and run track. Well, might not happen if she keeps losing to biological boys, as she has. And Governor Ferguson won't stand up for them. He won't advocate for them. He won't say he's proud of them, although he's so proud of his daughter, and he should be proud of his daughter. And look, I have a theory on all of this. Just a reminder, though, that I asked Bob this question directly at the legislative preview this year.
I want to be delicate with this, but since you've made it public, you know, you talk a lot about your own daughter and her participation in athletics publicly. I know she goes to a private school. Would you support a biological boy competing against your own child?
Oh, Brandy, forgot. Look, I understand your obsession.
With what?
With trans kids. And so what I would say is that, obsession. And so what I would say is, look, we live in a world right now where trans kids are going through a lot. Okay. And so, you know, I want to support trans kids. We have a federal government that essentially wants to erase that community. I'm diametrically opposed to that. So appreciate the question, but I'm ready for the next one.
Can you give a yes or no on it?
Next question.
Insane. And there were people online. Oh, you shouldn't bring up his daughter. He brings up his daughter all the time. He posts picture of his daughter all the time. Brags about how proud he is about her prowess at softball. Well, he just ignores these girls that are almost the same age as his own child. And he says trans kids are going through a lot. These female athletes are going through a lot. Oh, the Trump administration wants to erase trans kids. Well, you're trying to erase women and girls. And Frances Stout, who again was speaking in Olympia on Tuesday, who you've heard from a lot, she responded to this. I'll read you what she said in response to Bob Ferguson. It is straight fire. This is a 16-year-old girl. How dare you use this day meant to celebrate girls and women's sports when I have been asking you for a meeting for almost a year now? I have wanted to discuss my feelings as a 16-year-old girl who will not accept having boys play in my sport and be present in my bathrooms and locker rooms. At this point, I have no other option than to believe that the governor of Washington State is gaslighting and making a mockery out of young girls such as myself who are standing up to protect ourselves, fairness in sports, and safety in private spaces. I wish your daughter all the best in her softball career. However, I feel very sorry for her that she doesn't know what it feels like to have a dad that would protect her if what happened to me happened to her. Seeing this post only makes me believe that what I've said by calling you gutless is more true today than ever. By the way, I still invite you to come sit with me face to face. Either way, you have not fooled the American people or the voters of Washington State. They will show up in November, putting your woke gender ideology in its place once and for all, and beat you at your own game. Invitation stands. Ball is in your court. Frances Stout. Amen, Frances. What more do I say than that? Although I will reiterate my prediction. When it is politically palatable, Bob Ferguson will come out in favor of protecting girls' sports. He will act like he supported it all along. The media won't press him to ask why he didn't come out and do so publicly. He'll probably say something about the argument was very bigoted and anti-trans, and I didn't want to be part of anti-trans, and he'll come up with some excuse. He'll say, oh yeah, of course, girls' sports. Yeah, of course. I feel very strongly as the father of a female athlete. But he'll only do it when it's politically palatable. I don't think that day is too far away. Maybe even this year. Maybe after it becomes very apparent that the voters of this state and one of the deepest blue states in the nation are going to vote to protect girls' sports in November, will Governor Ferguson come out and do the right thing, what he knows to be the right thing. Unbelievable. All right, a couple bills in Olympia we want you to be aware of. One is pretty funny. Poor white dudes. If you're a straight white guy, I just feel bad for you at this point. I mean, Democrats really hate you. They just do. And then we'll talk about homelessness. First, are we in a tech bubble? Are we in an AI bubble? Could the future of AI impact your retirement portfolio? If you're questioning how your portfolio is positioned to deal with all these financial uncertainties, reach out to our friend Zach Abraham at Bulwark Capital. Go to knowyourriskpodcast.com and he can talk through any concerns you have. It's basically, look at it as a second opinion. Hey, Zach, Brandy said you'd give me a second opinion on my retirement portfolio, and he'd be happy to do that. He'll talk about the impact AI could have on the market this year, how Bulwark is focused on risk management, investment and how they incorporate value-based principles in managing retirement portfolios. Plus, they'll do a full reveal of how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, and give your retirement as much upside as possible. So schedule your free Know Your Risk portfolio review. Subscribe to Zach's Daily Market Recap at knowyourriskpodcast.com. That's knowyourriskpodcast.com. All right, we'll get to some bills. Also, I'm sure I'm going to get crap from my show poll today. I wanted to make it fun, okay? I know you're going to be like, Brandy, this is a stupid show poll. You know how hard it is every day to come up with a good show poll? But I thought it was a fun one. We can have a little debate. Maybe we'll give away some prizes as part of the show poll. I think that's a good idea. All right. White men, you're screwed if you want to start a business in Washington State. We were going to talk about this a couple days ago. Obviously, we've had quite a busy week. But House Bill 2684, no help with your business, straight cis, whatever they call them. Cis means straight, right? Yeah. Cis white men. So what HB 2684 does, it says it's an act relating to establishing guidelines for what constitutes a socially disadvantaged individual for the purpose of business enterprise state certification. Because, of course, you get lots of special treatment if you're a socially disadvantaged individual. Although, I'm now learning that I make that list, and I didn't get anything special. I'm paying taxes up the wazoo. So should I cash in on this? So it says, for the purposes of state certification, it is rebuttably presumed that the following individuals are socially disadvantaged. Women, thank you. Persons who are Black, African American, Hispanic, Latino, Native American, Asian, Pacific Islander, Native Hawaiian, or Middle Eastern or North African, LGBTQ individuals, and any other group as determined by the office by rule to be socially disadvantaged. Like literally the only group missing are straight white men. So why didn't they just say, for the purposes of state certification, straight white men are the only ones not socially disadvantaged? And also, like, they also don't want to be labeled disadvantaged, even if in a lot of ways society today does put them at a disadvantage. A lot of us don't want such a label. No matter our circumstances, how we grew up, the hand we were dealt in life, I don't need the government labeling me socially disadvantaged. Like, I'm just fine. So appreciate it. Although, can you define a woman? Because it says woman here, and I'm not 100% sure that you know the definition of women, because you've taken that definition out of a lot of other laws, you know, pregnant persons or chest feeders or whatever it is. So it's weird that you put the word woman in here. But straight, can you pick that picture back up? I like the white men we picked, because I feel like these are white men who voted for Kamala Harris. But they need to know that they're not, Democrats don't like them either. Even if you're straight and white and voted for Kamala. Although I don't know if those are straight men. You know, they're very Northwest. Yeah. Very grungy,
denim,
if you will.
Yeah, for sure.
I feel bad for whoever modeled for those stock photos. Apologize. Oh, good stuff. Okay, so one of my biggest frustrations with the party in power in Washington State is they won't back away from a failed policy. They just double and triple down. And homelessness, I think, is the biggest example of this, where we know that what they've been doing, Housing First, isn't working. We know it's not working. And homelessness, we spend more on it every year. We get more homeless people every year. But they won't like look at that and just say, okay, like let's try something new this year, which I'd give them a lot of grace to do that. Trial and error. I understand it's a complex problem, got a lot of layers, mental illness, substance abuse, all of these things. And yes, a little smidge of an affordability issue contributing to it as well. And if they were saying, coming out and saying, look, we did this, didn't work, we're going to do something else this year, I'd be like, all right, let's try something new. They can't do it. They won't do it. And they especially won't do it now that Donald Trump doesn't support Housing First and they want to defund any sort of money federally going to this Housing First approach. So what are they doing? Oh, tripling down on Housing First. President doesn't like it. Oh, we love it. Even if the Housing First, like now they have putting them in apartment buildings that become de facto drug dens. Our friend Jonathan Cho has done a ton of work exposing that. You go in there, it's disgusting filth, people overdosing and dying. Oh, we gave them a house, though. At least they overdosed and died with a roof over their head. So there's two bills, really, that are just quite concerning that Democrats seem set on passing this year. House Bill 2266 and House Bill 2489. So this is tripling down on housing first. And then the other one, which we talked briefly about at the beginning of the session, we'll go over the implications of it a little bit more. But it would basically say the state gets to decide whether you can clear your homeless camp in your city, which is just crazy. So it would prohibit cities from enforcing camping bans unless they can afford to house every homeless person with their pets and belongings in the immediate area. So you'd never be able to clear a homeless camp. Because a lot of these people, by the way, they don't want to be housed with any sort of stipulations, right? Oh, if you give them a house where they can continue to do drugs and not get treatment, great. But if there's any stipulations to being in that house, absolutely not. They're just going to pack up their stuff and move to a different location. So this comes after the city of Burien, which has a Democrat for mayor. They took this issue to the Supreme Court because they were being kind of lorded over by King County. Remember this? So King County Sheriff's Department, King County as a whole, King County wanted all its cities all to, oh, you're going to deal with homelessness how we want to deal with homelessness. And our deputies aren't going to come there and clear homeless encampments, even if, like in Burien's case, they had a homeless encampment right downtown. All these businesses, people shooting up in their alcoves and in their alleyways, and they were done with it. And so thank God there's a couple sane Democrats in the state, and Kevin Schilling, as the mayor, went to war with King County and then ultimately took it to the Superior Court, and won in Superior Court. So that was good. But now states like, King County couldn't get them to cooperate, so now we'll get them to cooperate and try to have some sort of statewide monolith of responses, even for Republican cities who don't allow this stuff at all. Just you wait, because the state is trying to make sure that everyone deals with homelessness like Seattle deals with homelessness. In Spokane, city officials and businesses, they came to an agreement recently. It's called Safe and Accessible Spaces. It was an ordinance that passed unanimously, which is bipartisan, and it's a camping ban ordinance. And it has to do with, you know, they worked with businesses, they figured out a compromise to make sure that, yes, we're going to try to get people into shelter, but you can't just camp in front of businesses. So you have all these cities that, thanks to Supreme Court rulings and a ruling out of Oregon, said, okay, we can do these camping bans as long as we offer them shelter. If they don't take it, they're gone. You can't turn down, you know, a temp shelter situation and continue to set up your tent and do drugs in front of a business. So you've got red cities, blue cities, west side of the state, east side of the state, cities just trying to do what's right and what makes sense. And the state Democrats see that and they say, no, you don't. It's wild. So Rep. Sam Lowe, who's a Republican, he had a question during a hearing that was held on this about, you know, okay, well, does this mean literally we'll let people camp anywhere?
So public property. So if it's a Little League baseball field or a soccer field, somebody sets up a couple tents on a soccer field, the kids come to do their game or whatever. Is this basically forbidding them from removing them from the soccer field?
So the bill does not define what public property is, although, you know, generally I would say if it's owned by the local government, that would be public property. So it would apply to that situation. So a park that's a public park, it would prevent the local government from enforcing local laws that would criminalize or penalize or prohibit someone from engaging in those, like sitting, lying, sleeping, the other defined terms on that park or that space, unless there's adequate alternative shelter space.
So soccer field, since that's where we're stuck right now, somebody's on a soccer field, they can't ask them to move to a different portion of the park or a different portion of the area. If they're set up on the soccer field, they're stuck there on the soccer field.
I think the way the bill is drafted, it would depend on whether there's whether the local government could demonstrate there's adequate alternative shelter space.
So yes, they're stuck there. Screw your kid's soccer game. I mean, what kind of civilized society lets homeless drug addicts take over places where kids are supposed to play? Remember Socialist Mayor Katie Wilson in her inaugural address talking about we need parks where kids can run around with abandon. Yeah, and get stuck in the foot with a Fenty needle. It's like you can't, this utopian society you dream of isn't possible in a society that allows people to basically shelter in place in a park, in a playground, where business operate. That isn't a functioning society, and it's not a functioning city. And I'm sorry, there's a lot of cities, even cities run by Democrats, that see what has happened to Seattle and don't want to get that bad. And this bill, the combination of bills saying housing first, yep, we got to keep doing that, and you can't clear any encampments because that feeds housing first. What they want is billions of dollars to go to nonprofits and to their cronies and allies to build these and run these apartment buildings or whatever it is. It's all about money, of course. But you have a lot of cities who have worked hard to not become what Seattle has become. City of Bellevue as an example. And now you have Democrats that want to force them to have the kind of homelessness response that has destroyed Seattle. Leadership. Unreal. All right, we'll get to Florida Report coming up next. Not a surprise, there's a huge difference in how Florida is handling student protests versus how Washington State is handling student protests, and I think Florida got it right. First, if you are a small to mid-sized landlord in Washington State and you're not a member of the Rental Housing Association of Washington, I strongly recommend checking them out, rhawa.org, rhawa.org. First of all, their members have a lot of fun. They're always having parties everywhere across the state that they're inviting us to. And I'm like, wow, that sounds like a good time. So, you know, a little social group to be able to get together and complain about the bad housing policy in Washington State. But they're also down in Olympia advocating on your behalf and trying to help them understand that, look, landlords are humans too. And putting these restrictions is going to make it more likely that people sell their rental units and our housing crisis gets worse. So you can support the work they're doing and also help have them help you on a personal level navigate this complex world of housing providers. It's Washington's trusted resource, empowering housing providers, rhawa.org, rhawa.org. All right, it is Thursday, after all. Let's get to our weekly segment where we head on over to the Sunshine State and check in on what's happening in Florida with my sister, Miranda.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Miranda, hello.
Hello.
So we've been dealing with some student walkouts. I was confronted with one by our studio and the kids swore at me and I was like, where are the adults? So Florida, no surprise, handling student protests much differently. Now, they acknowledge that kids have First Amendment rights, but we have to be reasonable about when and where and what it does with the educational process. So explain to me what's happening there and what they've decided.
Yeah, so it came to, I think this is probably something most states are dealing with this week and coming weeks, is it came to the attention of our state commissioner of education that there was some planned walkouts for schools across the state. So he sent out a general letter to school districts basically stating how he expects them to handle this, citing that kids aren't allowed to just walk out of school, protests aren't supposed to happen during school hours or on school property. If parents want their kids to participate, then they need to be signed out and brought from the school to a protest. It's not going to be anything that disrupts what's happening on school grounds and the education of the day. And he also goes on to kind of mention that teachers are sworn to keep a separation between these personal political views and their job as educators. And it also asks, parents to speak to their kids outside of school hours about how these two things should, like, they're both important, education and free speech, but they shouldn't interfere with each other.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, in some of the walkouts here, like, you got half the school walking out and kids left with no teacher in their classroom. And you can't tell me that doesn't disrupt the learning environment. So I agree with Florida. It's like, if you as a parent support, first of all, it's a liability issue. I keep saying that. You're responsible for those kids during school hours. You can't just let them walk out into the freaking street. That's nutty. And if their parent supports it, then their parent can sign them out and their parent can be responsible for them and take them somewhere else to protest if that's what they choose to do during the day. Yeah, it's just, I mean, that's so common sense. We have to have reasonable, you know, safety restrictions for kids. I mean, that kid was hit by a car the other day and is thankfully okay, but just wild. So there's this other thing happening, and I wonder if this is the case here. You know, they get these flyers that start circulating and everybody's like, oh, we're doing a walkout. Who is responsible? So there were a couple schools, specifically in Brevard County, Florida, where they did an investigation into flyers were circulating, right? And they want to know, did teachers put these together? Did students put these together? And should we play the clip of the... So this is the a local school board president, like head of a local school board, talking to a Florida podcaster about what they found when they looked into where the flyers came from.
We investigated a lot of the different posts that were coming in where we originally thought that they were coming from students. We're now convinced that it's an outside organization. We've interviewed the actual post that came out that there was a club that was going to be supporting making signs and stuff like that. We interviewed the teacher. We interviewed the students that were a part of it. And none of them had agreed that this was something that they had done. They apologized. They say we would never be a part of this. We interviewed. There's another ghost image of a student on one of the posts that they put on there to make it look like there was a student actually doing it. We interviewed him. He said, absolutely not. I would never do that. So we've got this now where we're looking at each one of them. These people, whoever they are, that are outside organization who's coming in and doing this now has actually started using fraud by taking our school logos, trying to pretend like they're other kids and doing different stuff. Now, they did not particularly use a person's name saying, oh, I'm in support of this. But what they did was they used our school logos to make our community look like we were a part of it. And look, here in Florida, we protect the First Amendment. We are always going to allow people, but not while they're in our schools, not on our campuses.
That's interesting. Now, look, could the kid be lying and saying, oh, no, I didn't do that, and actually did? I don't know the extent to which they've investigated that. Like, you know, are they matching printer ink? Like, was this your printer? Probably not. But that wouldn't surprise me. You got outside groups like Indivisible who want to make it seem like this is some larger movement than it is.
Yeah, I don't put it past that being a infiltration from outside just to kind of incite a walkout, even if it doesn't coming from inside. I think it's pretty easy to circulate an event and kids see it and think that somebody within the school is organizing it. I think it's all too easy these days for outside influence to create some drama within these school communities.
Yeah, and all these kids are walking out. They don't even know who started the idea. They're just doing it like little lemmings. All right, this is a story out of Florida that I almost don't believe, and I certainly don't agree with. Now, there's been a debate over whether, you know, big rig drivers should speak English. I have come around to that and realized after talking to people in the industry, yes, you need to be able to communicate in English to do that job. But starting today or tomorrow in Florida, in order to take a regular driver's license exam in Florida, they'll only give it to you in English.
Yep. Starting tomorrow, no matter if it's a renewal, if it's an actual driver's test for your 16-year-old, a permit test for your 15-year-old, anything related to driver's license in the state of Florida, the oral exam, a written exam, digital exam, behind the wheel, English only, no exceptions.
I think that's tough because Florida has a huge legal immigrant population. Wow. America's always been a melting pot. And there's some people who, you know, who like came from Cuba years ago and they barely speak English now. And people cannot make an argument that, hey, you should have learned English by now. But I mean, they've already been living their lives. They have jobs or whatever it is. And what if they can't get their driver's license renewed and they've got to go and like learn English and it hurts their job for a couple? I don't like it. I think it's too extreme. At least Spanish. Let's do the basics, right? I don't know. I have a problem with it.
I mean, so the more I think about it, I'm going to play devil's advocate here because the signs on the road aren't in English and Spanish. They are in English. And I've learned a good deal of Spanish based off of my business. So I know how to do photography in Spanish. That's something I've done. So I do think that it is beneficial for everybody on the roads. And I think it's beneficial for people who don't speak English as a first language to know enough English when it comes to driving.
Sure.
That they can pass a test in English.
Yeah.
Nobody's asking them to give like a speech on driving or write an essay on driving in English. It's more like, these are the signs. Do you know what these signs mean? Make a right, parallel park your car. I think somebody that's invested enough into being a member of in the American society and get a driver's license, that they can learn enough English to pass a driver's license.
Yeah, but think about how your test was. You know, you have a driver like next to you, or the instructor, and he'll say, okay, up here I want you to make a right, or up here I want you to do a U-turn. Well, they're like, what? Well, they'll just keep driving straight. Like, maybe they don't know what that means. I mean, I get it with the signs. I mean, but signs are usually pretty self-explanatory. So yeah. I don't know. I just think that, you know, there's a lot of good Republican, you know, legal immigrants who probably don't like a Republican governor doing this. So I guess we'll see how it goes. Is there a lot of blowback over it?
There is quite a bit of blowback. Some of the blowback just comes down to kind of what you said, people who've lived here for so long. Yeah. And now, but I also kind of fall back on that. If you've lived here for so long, how do you not already have your driver's license? Or why are you not attempting to like learn a little bit more English? It's hard to say that because in Miami, more people speak Spanish than English. Yeah. So I get it. But I think the argument is valid on both sides. I don't think this came from the governor's office. This is directly from the Florida Department of Motor Vehicles.
Yeah, but that's going to be under the governor's office. If he didn't want them to do it, he would tell them not to do it. But I would be okay with it if it were grandfathered in, like if you already have your license, because like you're talking about renewals, right? So everybody who gets a license from here on out, I'd be fine with that. But retroactive for somebody who's like 70 years old and is getting a renewal, you're right, though, they should probably be able to pass. I don't know. Maybe I'll change my mind. All right, Miranda, thank you.
You're welcome.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
All right, we got some updates to bring to you that just broke while we were airing Florida Report. I don't know. Did they break? Is it breaking news? Anyway, we'll get to them next. First, if you are planning to sell your home or you're in the early stages of contemplating it, I hear from people every day, Brandy, I'm leaving Washington. This is it. I don't want you to go. But if you do, reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. Sell with. I would never dissuade someone from finding happiness, you know? If you're going to leave, I guess. Okay. But contact sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. Wes and his team have an innovative marketing strategy, and just compare their listings to other listings. There's a reason why they get a bunch of people to come into your open houses and they get offers. It's because it all starts with how they market your home. And, you know, really, you want to make sure that your home is ready to be sold in the environment that we're in. It used to be that you could put a half burn down shack on the market and get $1 million for it. Not really the case anymore. Sometimes you do need to come in and make some strategic cosmetic upgrades to get the highest possible dollar for your home. And Wes loves helping with that. He can manage those projects, even make it so you don't have to pay for it until closing. We see so many five-star reviews of Wes Jones and his team. Elizabeth W. says, so glad I found Wes. Exactly what I was looking for when I needed to sell my condo. Working with them was stress-free, no pressure. She says, I appreciated all the support for a quick and easy sale. Sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, before I get to comments in our subscriber poll. So we got an update from the Mukilteo School District. You might recall, I mean, this story went crazy overnight. Did we do the story yesterday? I think we did. And it just went bonkers overnight. So there's this teacher named Veronica Cook in the Mukilteo, Washington School District. And she'd posted on a lady was posting about, I'm putting together these whistle packets. You know, the anti-ice whistle packets where they're going to blow and interfere with ice. She offered up her special needs kids. She said, if you need someone to package them, I'd love to have my special needs students to help. Didn't even use the phrase special education. Special needs students to help. That is grotesque. And she's a total left-wing loon. I mean, when you look at her social media, you can just tell. And big into the unions and all this stuff. So we reached out to the Mukilteo School District with a few questions. Here are the answers they gave us about Veronica Cook and what she did. So Nicole asked, are teachers allowed to volunteer their students for outside labor projects? And first of all, I'm glad they responded because usually school districts will not respond. So I'll give them some credit. And I did hear from a little mole that Veronica Cook was called into the principal's office yesterday. And I feel very confident in that reporting and that Veronica Cook is not at school today. So you can leave the picture of her up because I just think it's enjoyable. Are teachers allowed to volunteer their students for outside labor projects? Their answer, when classes routinely teach life skills as part of the curriculum, yes. And these life skills could include developing packaging skills for future workforce opportunities. These projects are often in partnership with appropriate community partners. To be clear, political activist groups are not considered appropriate partners. Nicole asked, are teachers allowed to include their students in their own activism efforts? The answer, no. They just said no. Nicole asks, would building whistle kits count toward educational hours? They said building whistle kits for a political activity is not an allowable activity. And the final question, does the school support interfering with law enforcement activities? To that, the Mukilteo School District responded, no. So credit to them. We'll see what happens with this teacher. But I laugh, but it is disgusting. You are offering up your special needs kids to help create anti-ICE whistle kits and to engage in activism. Lady, while you're out today, see a therapist, because that is grotesque. And be on notice for teachers. This is the only way we're going to dismantle this indoctrination. If we find out you do something crazy, we will put you on the show. And when we put you on the show, it's going to go viral on the internet. And I want you to really ask yourself, is indoctrinating these kids really worth it to me? The answer's got to be no, okay? A couple other updates. We got notified that if you listen to the show on podcast, yesterday's episode that I put out, apparently I put out an old episode. I don't know how it got uploaded wrongly, but if you listen to it and thought, this sounds familiar, it's because it was familiar. So we are re-uploading yesterday's episode, the 2-4 episode, which is titled The Tide is Turning. And so that should update across all your podcast platforms. So if you thought you were going crazy, you probably are, but not for this reason. You were actually right on that. And then did I have one more thing? Oh, yes, I wanted to point out, while we were doing Florida Report, so we started the show, you don't even know about this, we started the show talking about House Democrats denying me a press pass. So I had tweeted this out very late last night. I think I put it out, you know, maybe around 10 p.m. on social media. And it has gotten a lot of traction. And I tagged Wall House Dems. They untagged themselves. They just untagged themselves so they don't have to hear anyone's criticism. Shocking. Or even read anyone's criticism. Because you can do that, like untag me from this conversation. And they have done that. I just noticed that on my post, so I thought I'd share that. If you didn't do anything wrong, why are you worried? All right. Let's get to comments. You're going to leave us? You don't want to be with us for comments? Okay. It's up to you. I mean.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Forgot we were
not going to commercial.
If you hate everyone, that's fine. a lot of super chats, and I appreciate that. And a lot of people asking, what can I do to support you? You subscribing to our show is the only support that I need. I mean, that really is, we're trying to, and yes, I do think the Seattle Times should go bankrupt. That is my ultimate goal. But until that day comes, I support their access to everything, and I support their press freedom. But I just think the product that they're putting out is really contrary to what journalism should be doing. But you guys supporting our show and choosing to say, this is where I'm putting my $5 a month, is all the support that I need from you. And I absolutely appreciate it. We already have a couple law firms. I just got an email from a different one, but I know the Citizen Action Defense Fund has expressed interest in helping us out with this. So
they are pretty much the stranger now without the language.
Oh, the Seattle Times.
Yes.
I thought you meant the Citizen Action Defense Fund.
No, sorry.
I was like, hey, those are our homies. All right. So Bill Biz, $20 super chat. Brandy, sue those idiots. Legal precedents like Cheryl v. Knight prohibit denial of access based on arbitrary standards and viewpoint discrimination. All denied independent media should have standing. Chuck Heller, Undivided with Brandy Cruz, thank you so much for shedding light on HB 2320 and 2321. The 3D printing community appreciates it. Well, I appreciate you. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I thought that was a fascinating bill. Mm-hmm. Old Sub Sailor, I know, stating the obvious, but it still needs to be said again and again and again. I just want to say Pravda-style press that will only support their initiatives and talking points. Oh, they just want a Pravda-style press that will only support their initiatives and talking points. A purely socialist-controlled press corps. Yes. Matt says, they came for Brandy and I did not speak out. Then they came for Cho and I did not speak out. Then they came for Ari and I did not speak out. Now they come for me and there was no one left to speak out for me. Amen.
Well done.
Moon Goddess, Washington State has fallen to the Prince of Evil. Who's the Prince of Evil?
I mean, I'm guessing, fallen? I don't think we've fallen, but we're...
The Prince of Evil, is it Bob?
I would guess it was Bob.
Hey, Bob lets me into his press conferences.
We're still
working. For now.
Yeah.
Anna MB, Daniel Walters, a Spokane reporter, posted just recently that he doesn't agree Democrats should block your press pass. Well, that's nice of him. Shasha Windfeather, you should just go in. If Don Lemon showed us anything, the press can go anywhere they want without repercussions.
Wow.
I'm thinking about it. I would love to meet the state trooper who would physically remove me from the House floor.
I think they'd probably do it because they had to, but they'd do it while smiling
and
they'd say, and laughing.
Sorry, Brandy.
sorry.
John, notice how they don't care about consistency. Only you do. Yeah, they're totally inconsistent. On Governor Ferguson celebrating Girls and Women in Sports Day, I was like, I have a headache thinking about it.
It bothers
me so much.
Like, I didn't see your post until after I texted you with the same screenshot, and we both said the same thing.
Yeah, Nicole texted me.
Definitely trolling.
He's trolling us, and I had already posted. Oh, is he trolling us? Totally felt the same way.
He's definitely trolling.
CHBedient, I wonder if all he's referring to are the trans girls taking girls' spaces in sports. And yeah, I mean, if you actually think boys are girls, then I suppose you would say Happy Girls Sports Day because you mm-hmm. make no differentiation.
And open it to everyone.
Yeah. Don Hebben, a governor that refuses to have a debate sounds like an actual threat to democracy. Yeah. What are the teen girls going to do?
It is pretty shocking that he has not given a response to them and acknowledgement.
I did get a response from the governor's office. So I had sent, yes. Okay. So before coming down on Tuesday, I think Monday night, mm-hmm. I sent an email to his communications person and just said, and I don't know if I talked about this on the show, I just said, look, you know, the girls have been trying to meet with the governor. I don't know the avenues where they'd been requesting those meetings. I said, they haven't had any luck. We're going to be in Olympia. I would be mm-hmm. happy to facilitate. I don't have to be there. We don't have to have cameras there. I just want the girls to be able to talk to him for 5 minutes or whatever it is. And I did get a response. And she said, hey, you know, he can't do it today. But here's the way that they can request something directly. And so I'm going to have him do that. And maybe he's open to it in the future. But I don't know. He was in Olympia. I literally went to a press conference. Mm-hmm.
Have time for many questions. So
he did say he was
really
in a hurry.
Busy.
Yeah. Let's see. On the Democrats wanting to stop camping bans, Papa Woody, this has been an issue for years now. In our small town, the police can't remove them from the sidewalk because the state has set precedent. I think that's now changed because of some of the higher court rulings, yeah. where as long as you offer them shelter, it can be a temp shelter situation. And if they say no, whoop, they can go.
But if you're a parent that shows up at a soccer field and someone's camping there, you don't have time to go and say, hey, what shelter has an opening for this person so I can get them off so my kid
you
can play soccer today?
As a dad, you should be able to go over there and rip that tent down and be like, get the out of here.
Or have police do it. But like nobody has that kind of time to sit there and be like, oh, yeah. We have somebody over here.
You
like,
think in go. Florida, oh. If they're camping on a kid's soccer field, that they're giving them a warning? No, absolutely not. That thing's getting tossed in a gator-infested pond. Speaking of Florida Report, Jay Can, yep. So I argued with Miranda a little bit about really only, can only take the driver's test in English.
I totally agree with that.
Really?
Our signs are in
but
English.
But what about people?
Why, I don't understand enforcing it for just truck drivers. I mean, they're a regular car is just as dangerous. An F-350 is just as dangerous to some extent. I mean, it's just as deadly.
I've driven in foreign countries where the language is different. And I managed it fine. I mean, have you not ever gone to a foreign country?
I haven't. It's kind of freaky.
And,
well, yeah, not where the language is
I
different.
I mean, I go and I don't even need a license. I drive on the wrong side of the road, right? Well, their right side, but the wrong side for us. And I manage just fine. Come on. I'm right.
Okay. I will give you like maybe Mexico. Most of the countries I've driven in have all been English. So English fine. So, but maybe Mexico. But I would say it's a different driving style down there. Mm-hmm. And most things have pictures and some things are written in English too.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. Like in Amsterdam at the train station, nothing was in English. And I was so confused. And I was like, oh my gosh. And we ran all around hell trying to find our platform. But
and you probably should. I'm not even saying that you shouldn't have to have some sort of driver's lesson or some mm-hmm. sort of like read or watch this video before driving on the wrong side of the road for us or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, we probably are dangerous maybe operating vehicles in other states or other countries. But I will say they make us drive little cars. All the other ones drive little cars.
So you guys had some thoughts. Jay Can says, yep, English is the language of our country. Good thing. Lynn Blevins says they will just drive without a license and insurance and that may cause more problems. And that's true too. Mike Whitman, why is almost every country in the world allowed to have one language, but the U.S. cannot because it's racist.
And that is true. We don't get licensed in other countries. So you can come over here as a visitor and drive with like a special insurance, right?
Yeah, I don't know how that works in the U.S. But I mean, like, I've driven in a lot of foreign countries. Mm-hmm. I mean, I drove in New Zealand. I drove in Japan. I drove in...
Well, New Zealand, they speak mostly English.
Yes, but like, it's still yeah. like the wrong side of the road and the stuff. Yeah. And also, we plugged in GPS. It took us on GPS over a creek. Over... The road was, you had to drive over a stream.
I mean, did you?
Yes. We were like freaked out. And then we started like to question ourselves and backed up. It was crazy. Anyway, let's get to our closing sanity check, which is President Trump making a prediction for the Super Bowl. First, February, can't believe it's February, is and husband, I want a circle box of chocolates. That's all I want for Valentine's Day.
Wow.
So if you're, I just want, you know, I want the...
Yeah.
Chocolates where I can take a half a bite of
you
one.
Deserve it.
I do. So, husband, that's what I want for Valentine's Day. I don't need anything else. Thank you. February is Valentine Roofing Month also, and it's all about spreading the love. So if you're a Valentine customer and you loved your new roof or siding, now is a great time to share that love with your friends and family because Valentine Roofing is expanding their customer referral program through the end of February. So when you refer friends or family for a new roof or siding, you'll earn your choice of a free maintenance service or $250 gift card, which is sweet. Man, you refer a couple friends and family members, you got a lot of money there. And as you know, you can be confident when referring your loved ones because every Valentine Roofing customer receives the Valentine experience, seamless communication, meticulous cleanup, and extra mile service, even in winter weather. So talk to your friends and family. Tell them to call 206-ROOFING again today. Again, call 206-ROOFING. Please tell them you heard about them on Undivided and make sure that your friend and family member gets that nice little referral bonus as well. 206 Roofing. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. All right. Before we get to President Donald Trump's prediction on the Super Bowl, let's hear your guys' prediction. Yes, it's a lazy poll, but I thought we needed something fun at the end of a real stressful week.
Before you read everyone else's, what's yours?
Oh. No, I think the Seahawks will win.
But score?
I always say like 27 to 20.
Okay, I like it. That's fair. I'm going to say 13-24. I don't know.
Seahawks lose?
13-24 Seahawks.
Oh, Seahawks. Sorry. Okay, gotcha. 95% of you say the Seahawks will win and 5%
wow.
the Patriots. Bill says it'll be over by halftime. And then I've got all these. So let's do this. I'll close it off at the end of the day today. So your guess has to come today. And if you get it right, this is only for our subscribers on Patreon, Locals, and X under this thingy. So don't put your guesses anywhere else. We'll send you a free tote bag.
Okay.
Okay. And if I run out, I'll send you something else.
Yeah.
Okay. But I don't think there'll be that many accurate guesses. If you get it right, but your guess had to have come in today, but 95% of you saying,
I like it.
Yeah. Good. Good stuff.
I think they've got a pretty good shot.
Yeah, but, you know, they get really in their own head a lot, and then they coog it.
A lot of teams do that. Mm-hmm. I feel like this team, not so much. They're a little different. They seem chiller.
They seem more chill, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's see what the president of the United States has to say about it, shall we? All right. President Donald Trump from the Oval Office making a prediction for the Super Bowl.
I have a feeling this is going to be a great Super Bowl. I've watched all season. I've seen these two teams just win, win, win. I see two great quarterbacks, young, great quarterbacks. It's going to be a fantastic Super Bowl. And everybody wants to hear who I pick. And I'll tell you what.
Oh, no. That is such a good troll.
That's pretty
funny. Tell you what. All right. He doesn't want to make any Americans angry, you know, although I really thought it would have been a good opportunity for him to take kind of a political shot at Seattle.
Yeah, it is a good opportunity because, you know, he's rooting for the Patriots because he was
100%.
Yeah.
Well, East Coast. Sure. But
well, he's friends with Tom Brady and all the Bill Belichick and all them, even though they're not there. I still feel like he's going towards.
Yeah. So we'll Patriots. See. All right. We'll have a fantastic weekend watching the Super Bowl. We'll have a new episode of Politics Unpacked out. And then on Sunday we have, what is he, 84? 80? How old is the farmer we have on the show on Sunday?
Oh, gosh.
Like in his 80s.
Yes.
And the state of Washington is trying to take his farm away. It's an insane story. He's going to join us on Sundays with subscribers. So if you'd like to support.
85.
85. Wow. And they're trying to take his farm away, literally trying to take his home away.
For no reason.
For no, no reason. It's crazy. He's in north of Spokane. So he's going to join us on the show on Sunday. You can watch that by becoming a subscriber. Go to UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com. While you're there, don't forget to shop our merch store. We got totes. We got hats. We got stickers. And you know what? You put that sticker on your car, everyone knows that you're smarter than they are because you listen to Undivided, or they're just going to rear-end you. We sell them in packs of two so that when someone eventually rips it off your car, you have another one to put right back on.
There you go.
All right. Keep supporting the show, UndividedPod.com. Hit the little button that says support the show for $5. Lots of content still to come this weekend and a blockbuster story on Monday that I think is going to really change and turn the tide on this boys and girls sports issue. So we have some, what would you call it? Journalism even?
Yes.
Huh. With or without a press pass. I got journalism coming your way on Monday. All right. Bye.